Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
There's a young man who just strolled into the studio that I recognize. We'll change subjects here with Doma T. Pongo, former WGN Radio news reporter. Now he's so hip. He's too cool for school now. He's at MTV News. Dominator, how are you? Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Saw your piece on online.
Yeah.
They debuted it last, was it last night or
last
is that
night.
Tonight?
Last night. Well, we had a private screening last night, so I got a chance to see how a lot of, some of our mutual friends feel about it. A couple media folks were out there and some community activists, people who are really close to this Kanika Jenkins story, which is the premiere episode, came out and checked it out last night.
I have a couple questions for you about that.
Yes.
Doma T, stay right there. Doma T. Pongo is in our studio. You may know him from MTV News.
I first learned of Kanika Jenkins as a reporter on Chicago's WGN Radio. Immediately, I felt a connection to her. I'm in my 20s, close in age to Kanika, and we both came from similar neighborhoods in Chicago.
This ain't my opus, it's just a quote from the dopest.
Well, I was once coming up as a rapper and MC. Her story reminded me of why I made the change to journalism, to tackle the issues that profoundly affect the people of Chicago.
10:43, so that's part of the intro to the piece that Doma T. Pongo just dropped for MTV News.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were an up-and-coming rapper at one point.
Yeah. That was actually my precursor to journalism.
Yeah,
it taught me, like, I realized that it wasn't so much the music that drew me, but the idea of telling stories and being a storyteller. And that's what hip-hop did for me, and I kind of used that in journalism.
How were you? Pretty good?
I was excellent, John.
You got a good voice. You got a good look.
How
do you transition? What keeps somebody from you? Obviously, you have a successful career doing what you're doing, but I wonder what keeps somebody like you at that point in your life from not becoming a nationally known hip-hop star, make a living doing it.
Yeah, I think the main thing was I thought practically about a life on tour and said, I don't know if I really want to go on tour and live on the road and eat crappy food and be on the tour bus.
Were you writing your own songs, right?
Writing my own songs.
Your own raps?
And at that point, I hadn't really broken through. Like, I hadn't done anything that was getting me big national attention, so I didn't really have something concrete, but journalism really opened up for me.
And some hip-hop stars and rap stars are vulnerable and honest.
Yeah.
Juice WRLD. Some of them are thuggish. Some of them are, you know, it seems to me like they have their personalities that come through. What was your persona or personality as a musician or a musical actor?
You hit it on the head. Vulnerable, honest, socially conscious, heavy emphasis on lyricism. How can I play with syllables and wordplay and get a message across that actually means something?
Are you a singer? Do you sing well too?
No, not at all. I'm terrible as a singer. That's the other thing,
let's
too.
Let's hear some. Try it. Let's see.
We'll be the judge.
Listen, you don't want to do that. Right. You don't want anybody to crash today. But the thing is, though, because socially conscious music doesn't play well in clubs or on the radio, I had a longer journey to what success would look like as a rapper than I would doing anything else. So I was like, is this a passion or is this something that's therapeutic and cathartic? And it's more cathartic, is more.
So you could still do it.
Yeah. And I still write, even as I was dealing with these cases, like the Kanika Jenkins case, it hit me so deeply personally that I had to find ways to decompress, and writing verses was my way of doing that.
Before the first of the year, you were on with us and you were talking about this new series. You sort of hinted at it on the air, but you couldn't say too much specifically about it. But you said it's an investigative series that MTV is doing. It's about these crimes. The first one is going to debut a Chicago story. So we thought it's either R. Kelly or Jussie Smollett.
That's right.
But I guess those stories have been fairly investigated.
Yeah.
Although we certainly recall the Kanika Jenkins story. I don't know that it got the attention that those stories did.
Mm-hmm.
But was it a national story? Did people pay attention to her?
Like crazy. This thing was a national phenomenon. There were internet detectives that were trying to, and amateur detectives. Internet
oh, that's
sleuths.
Right. Because
yes.
I don't think it was originally what happened, but it was the trying to sort of figure out what happened after the fact.
Yeah, and just to remind folks, Kanika Jenkins found frozen to death in a walk-in freezer at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Rosemont.
When?
In September of 2017.
Huh.
And we began shooting this in 2018, actually.
Really?
Yeah. And we were, and we, I was working on that while I was doing everything here, everything behind the scenes.
So you were covering that originally.
I was covering that originally in real time. I hadn't released much, you know, of the doc, you know, I couldn't release anything from the documentary back then, but I was covering that, of course, for WGN Radio, in addition to covering it for MTV behind the scenes.
So she's drunk at that hotel that night, partying. Yeah, right. Was it some special occasion?
A friend's birthday.
And the video that you show, describe the video of her.
Yeah, the video that you see Kanika walking, stumbling through a hotel hallway. And the last time you see her, she's stumbling through a kitchen at the Crown Plaza Hotel, rounds a corner, and you don't see her on that surveillance camera anymore.
She disappears from view. And what is she doing in the kitchen?
That's what the interview is trying to figure out.
But she
was
is,
she led there? Was she assaulted?
We don't see any. But we don't see anybody.
We
else
don't see
her.
Anyone.
And when she's stumbling down the halls, she is so drunk. She's banging into the walls. She can barely stand. Mm-hmm. I mean, to see somebody that profoundly drunk, one of the things you have is, oh boy, she's going to feel terrible tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
I mean, she's that drunk, right?
Yes,
or
yes.
At least is acting that drunk. Then we see her in the video in the kitchen.
Yes.
And then we don't see her again.
She disappears from view, and that's the last time we see her. So now this is where the internet detectives come in. So the internet detectives had all kinds of theories. They had theories that someone altered the video, and she was actually being led down that hallway by someone who had been Photoshopped out of it, video-wise. Like, these are the theories. I'm not saying that this is what happened. These are the theories that we explore.
Sure, but I guess, and those were, this story was ripe for that sort of, you know,
conjecture,
because it's so weird that she ends up in the freezer.
Like,
in the,
how does that happen?
It's a walk-in freezer.
Walk-in freezer. How does that happen? How does someone? How does a hotel patron even end up in the kitchen of a hotel?
But when she's in there and the door closes behind her,
that's right.
You can't open it from the inside?
You can, and that's what made this such a mystery. You actually, there's a latch inside the freezer that you can push open. That's one of those things. That's not a spoiler, but that's one of those things that we
I didn't
look
know
at
that.
It's in the,
and
in the
I presume it was functional. I mean, if she had been, you know, coherent enough,
mm-hmm.
and saw it, she would have thought to push it down, and it would have opened up.
Unless, of course, if the theories are true or were true, unless somebody else was involved,
yeah.
and that's why people thought someone else was involved.
What was the cause of death?
The cause of death, according to the medical examiner's office, was hypothermia, and the death was ruled an accident.
So she froze to death
in that freezer. What was found in her system was, of course, the alcohol, but also a medication that's consistent with epilepsy or migraines. And so people were wondering, was this a party drug? Was she drugged? It isn't considered a party drug, so what was that drug? That's something else we explore in the series as well.
Well, did she have a falling out with a boyfriend or a girlfriend, or were there other people that might be suspect to do her harm?
We dig into all of that in the series. It comes on 8 o'clock Central Wednesday night.
But it's also conceivable, Domati, that she was so drunk she's stammering down the hall, finds her way in the kitchen. It doesn't make any sense because she's that drunk. Mm-hmm. She sure is looking at it in the video, and I don't know why or how she got into that freezer. It's either open or she opens it. But I guess my point is, mm-hmm. as, you know, incomprehensible or illogical all this is, it also makes sense if you're just so drunk, you're not even hardly responsible for your actions.
And that's what the Rosemont Police Department believes. They said, you know, we got the first on-record interview with the superintendent of police in Rosemont, and that appears in the documentary. And that's what he says. He says this is an accident.
Yeah.
And so the main thing, though, that we explore, and in my opinion, one of the most riveting parts of the documentary is this conversation about police-community relations. Why didn't activists, because activists went out and protested at Crown Plaza for about 2 months straight, every day, for about 2 months.
Hmm.
Why were activists mobilizing? Well, that's because around this time, you remember, we were still dealing with the aftermath of the Laquan McDonald shooting. And so people did not believe what the police had to say about anything as related to something that happened to black people. It's like, we can't trust them. They didn't heighten the level of urgency. They closed this case too soon. This is what activists are saying. And so we hear from the activists as well. Jamal Green, known activist in many circles here in Chicago, appears in the documentary as well.
What does Kanika Jenkins' family say?
We haven't heard from her since this released, but
her sister, you mean? Or her mother?
Her mother. Yeah. We as far as speaking, because she's involved with ongoing litigation with the Crowne Plaza Hotel.
Huh.
So it's a very delicate situation legally in terms of what she's saying publicly. But one thing I can say is that these kids, her friends, Kanika's friends, who were in the hotel room that night, have been cyberbullied to no end. And
how old are they? How old was she again?
She was 19 at the time, so that put the friends in the early 20s now, 22, 21.
Cyberbullying, what's going on?
People out online saying that they had something to do with the passing of their friend. They're saying that the friends, maybe the friends set her up. That's one of the theories. And we explore that theory in the documentary. And I just got to say, you have to... These people are real people. Don't go online badgering Irene or Bree Bree. These are Kanika's friends. They still have to live with the loss of their friend. And I think that people who love Kanika, who love her, who love her friends, her circle, will be pleased with the documentary because of the way we'd spoken to them about them and that whole situation and their friendship.
Doma T. Pago is in our studio, former WGN radio newsman, host of MTV News. This Kanika Jenkins investigative piece on MTV True Life Crime. So when can we watch this on TV?
It's going to be simulcast on both MTV and VH1, commercial free, Wednesday at 8 p.m. Central.
Does it fill the whole hour, or are there other stories that you tell? It
fills the whole hour. Right. Now, for the rest of the series, this is an 8-episode docuseries. So the following week, continue to tune in. We're doing multiple stories. We investigate the stabbing of Junior Guzman Feliz, who was killed in the Bronx, caught on camera, viciously stabbed. He was 15 years old, stabbed, I believe, 17 times. And we investigate why he was stabbed. What happened? Was this a gang ordered murder? Was he in the wrong place at the wrong time? We investigate the passing of Mujay Dumbaya, who was comes from a family who immigrated from West Africa, came to Michigan, only to find out that their daughter would be assaulted and eventually killed. And we look into who did it and why.
Well, stories are always so tragic, aren't they, Doma T? Where somebody comes to this country, I'm thinking of the young lady whose name escapes me now, but the Chinese exchange student who was a graduate student at the University of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, their families are like, oh, America is this great beacon of hope and education and freedom and opportunity. And it's a little scary, but they'll be fine. And then something tragic happens. Mm-hmm. And it's awful when it happens to somebody from the U.S., but it must just be another layer of tragedy or sorrow to the parents that send their kids off to America, and then, son of a gun, something bad happens.
They escaped war in Liberia.
Exactly.
And went to Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yeah, you think that would be a safe play.
Exactly. It, on paper, everything made sense. I mean, the family had seen Mujay's father was murdered as a result of this war, like in this story, like
in Liberia,
like this story has so many. It almost is like a success story about this family escaping the war-torn conditions, getting refugee status in America, moving to Grand Rapids, Michigan in the suburbs, and you think they're going to be okay. And then this terrible thing happens. These are the type of stories we tell.
Is there always a racial component to this?
No. It just so happens that that marginalized communities just ended up being kind of the lens that we look through these stories. I think in part because a lot of these stories went viral and people were having conversations online. And it just so happens that black communities over-index in the use of Twitter. Black Twitter is a force on its own.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yes.
Because the white community uses, the president uses, everybody uses Twitter.
Oh, yeah, everybody uses Twitter. But you think it's a little more powerful? Differently, a little differently. Because when things happen to marginalized communities, oftentimes investigators don't pay close enough attention unless you raise concerns. And then you start to see people dive into action. And so every time something happens, folks are tweeting, hey, look into this, speak up for us. We don't want this to fall by the wayside, you know, because people can't afford personal independent autopsies. These families can't afford the best lawyers or crisis managers to help them through these things. Versus if something happens to someone from a middle class or affluent family, you have the resources to you know, get the authorities involved.
So is it your interpretation then that all of the chatter on social media after Kanika Jenkins' death wasn't just gossip? It was activism. It was people trying to help.
Yes, yes. Trying to help. Trying to get justice for Kanika if this was a crime, and trying to help her mother find answers. But it's not just marginalized communities, though. You also have the story of Jerrica Binks, which that preview is up at MTV.com as well. Jerrica Binks was a runner who went missing. White girl, young, 24 years old, beautiful family in Utah, went and met with her family, asked questions, met with the investigators, homicide detectives, trying to figure out, was this a homicide?
Are you doing all these stories, Domati?
Hosting the whole series, all the stories.
Wow.
8 episodes. You've got Sarah Stern in New Jersey, young white girl, art student, brilliant, passed away.
We're out of time, Dom, so tonight...
Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, rather.
Yes.
Last night was the premiere. Wednesday night on TV.
Yes.
On VH1 and MTV. And then is it every Wednesday night?
And then it's every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Central. And for all those logistics, all that information, you can follow me at Domati, D-O-M-E-T-I underscore on social media. And, of course, at MTV and at MTV News.
Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, John.
Congratulations. I'm sorry these are the topics, but they need investigation. Sounds like you've done good work so far.
Well, thank you for making this a home for me, and this is cathartic to unpack with you, as always. I thank you for being here for real.